to a great number of people, a great...
Black market, here we go.
Thank you, everyone, for coming to the May 4th meeting of the Measure 91 Joint Implementation Committee. Tonight we have some interesting pieces of work that we're going to cover. We have the pleasure of having the director of the Oregon Health Authority, Lynn Saxon, here to offer a few insights for us, provide some testimony on the work, and then we are going to walk through the amendments that people have proposed to go into Senate Bill 844 so that Mr. Crawford can describe what they consist of and proponents of the amendments have an opportunity to describe their rationale in seeking to amend the bill to include those. So with that, do we have Ms. Saxon here? Yes, we do. Thank you so much. It would be wonderful if you could join us at the front, and we really appreciate your attendance. Sorry for the late start. We had a really long floor vote today, and it threw a lot of other things into a little disarray. But welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. If you could please state your name for the record and introduce your colleagues. Hello, Priscilla. Nice to see you. We look forward to hearing what you and your team have to say.
Great. Thank you. Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Chair Leninger, and members of the committee, I'm Lynn Saxton, the director of the Oregon Health Authority. I'm joined by Priscilla Lewis on my left, deputy director of the Public Health Division, and Steve Wagner, administrator for the Center for Health Protection in our Public Health Division. We're here today to provide information on Senate Bill 844 and regulation of medical marijuana. The Oregon Health Authority supports the goals of Senate Bill 844, which works to ensure that the medical marijuana market is sensibly and responsibly regulated. OHA is committed to ensuring availability of safe medical marijuana products for those under a physician's recommendation. I also want to assure a level playing field for the emerging retail market so that small businesses can succeed. We've learned from other states that clear safeguards are needed so that medical marijuana does not become a source for an unregulated black market. As amended, this bill establishes a path towards this goal. However, this bill will not fully achieve its intended goals and will not allow OHA to efficiently and effectively identify diversion risks in the supply chain. This could put Oregon at risk of violation of the Cole Memo. What I'll talk to you about today will be in three parts: how OHA regulates medical marijuana today, how OHA will implement Senate Bill 844 as amended, and what additional steps are needed to assure the goals of Senate Bill 844 are realized. Let's start with how the Oregon Health Authority regulates medical marijuana today. We have our team provided a couple graphics because I think this is complex and it's best understood in these presentations. So let's start with the current application process. The Oregon Medical Marijuana Program is a state registry program within the Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. Our role is to administer the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, which was approved by Oregon voters in November 1998. Under the Act, Public Health is responsible for issuing medical marijuana cards to individuals who, according to a physician, have a qualifying medical condition that the use of medical marijuana may lessen or relieve the symptoms or effects of that condition. The conditions for which an individual can qualify for a medical marijuana card are specifically outlined in the Act and may be expanded upon by rule. Under current law, the Oregon Health Authority does not have the authority to evaluate the medical practices of physicians that recommend marijuana for their patients. However, OHA has clarified through rule that physicians treating 450 or more medical marijuana patients must provide evidence that they are the attending physician for a condition as required by statute. Current law also limits OHA's role with growers of medical marijuana. Once a patient receives a card from OHA, they may decide to grow for themselves or designate an individual 18 years or older to act as grower. Our only role is to conduct a criminal background check on all designated growers. We do not have any authority to inspect, regulate, or interact with medical marijuana growers or track the movement of marijuana products. In 2013, the legislature adopted House Bill 3460, sponsored by Representative Buckley and Senator Prezansky, which required OHA to establish rules for the establishment of medical marijuana dispensaries in the state. At that time, an estimated 100 to 300 dispensaries were operating illegally statewide. The intent of the legislation was to reduce black market diversion, establish patient safety standards, and comply with the federal guidelines regarding marijuana enforcement enumerated in the Cole memo. OHA is required to inspect dispensaries annually to ensure compliance with the law. Program staff may also visit dispensaries at any time and assess compliance. Inspections are unannounced. Authority granted to OHA allows us to require that products leave dispensaries in child-resistant packaging that is not attractive to youth and carries a noticeable warning. OHA also requires testing of products and labeling to identify THC and cannabinoid content and ensure that pesticides, molds, and mildew are not in the product. Because OHA has no authority over the laboratories, the program cannot currently assure the quality of the testing. And I think I'd just like to draw your attention to the second slide, which is the current state that I just described with a color code in the upper right-hand corner. The Oregon Health Authority recognizes the importance of the elements of Senate Bill 844 and is ready to implement them. These important components include a grow site registry, which creates a medical marijuana grow site registration system and allows the Oregon Health Authority to perform inspections at licensed grow sites, processing sites, and laboratories. A processing site registry creates a marijuana processing site registration system to track and regulate the processing of marijuana into products, concentrates, and extracts. Product tracking creates and maintains a database of information related to production of marijuana at a grow site, processing of marijuana at a processing site, and transfer of product throughout the distribution chain. Laboratory accreditation and licensing establishes a licensing and accreditation program for laboratories that conduct testing of recreational and medical marijuana items. Production limits, limiting the amount of marijuana in plants that can be produced at a given grow site. Packaging standards, again, provides us with the responsibility for rules that define standards for packaging and labeling of all marijuana items. I would direct you to the second slide, or the third slide. Thank you. This is the projection of Senate Bill 844. The Oregon Health Authority welcomes having an expanded role in the public health regulation of medical marijuana from the grow site to retail. Once enacted, Oregon Health Authority would hire the correct number and type of inspectors for grow sites and laboratories and work quickly to ensure rules are established to provide the necessary guidance to the new regulated community and reduce risks to public health and safety. We will also hire staff to monitor and analyze data and develop systems on how to identify diversion risks in the system. We understand and share the committee's interest in ensuring that the medical marijuana market does not become a source for black market marijuana. However, while Senate Bill 844 is well-intended, we believe there are several issues that will limit our ability to accomplish the intended goals of the legislation. Our first concern is that OHA is required to track the amount of usable marijuana that is transferred from grower to processing site, from processing site to dispensary, then from dispensary to cardholder. However, under Senate Bill 844, medical marijuana growers are only required to submit information to OHA on product transfers on a monthly basis. Monthly reporting will not provide the information necessary to actually track the amount of marijuana that is present in the system and could allow the possibility for significant diversion. In order to successfully reduce diversion, OHA will need the ability to track inventory and transfer of marijuana with equal visibility to the retail seed-to-sale system. Concern number two. There are currently no possession limits for medical marijuana cardholders. We believe that by not having possession limits, a system would be created where medical marijuana cardholders could become the source for black market marijuana sales. Concern number three. Medical marijuana processors under Senate Bill 844 are allowed to transfer any amount of marijuana to any patient, caregiver, or dispensary without limitation. We believe this provides the opportunity for processors to become unlicensed and unregulated distributors, i.e., while licensed as a processor, they would not be licensed for the dispensary-like activity. Concern number four. We also have numerous concerns around commercial kitchen regulation. While local public health departments regulate restaurants, the Oregon Health Authority does not have expertise in regulation of food processing sites or commercial kitchens. While we understand the committee's concerns around too many state regulators impacting the industry, it is necessary to rely on the technical expertise of the Department of Agriculture. Just as a complex industry relies on specialists, complex regulation and health protection requires specialists in the field. Additionally, by only including regulation requirements for processors using edibles, a processor or a commercial kitchen who makes concentrates or extracts may do so in a facility that has not been inspected for health and safety standards. Our overall concern is that we risk creating separate and unequal regulatory systems with an expectation of equivalent oversight and similar outcomes. As I shared earlier, the Oregon Health Authority fully supports the goals of Senate Bill 844 and believes that there are additional steps that can be taken to ensure that the medical marijuana market does not become a source for black market marijuana sales in Oregon. These potential steps include OHA could be given the authority to collect data on real-time point-of-transfer reporting and recording of medical marijuana transfers. This real-time reporting would help us ensure there is integrity in the system and allow us to better identify weak points for diversion of product into the regulated, unregulated black markets. One tool that is available is to track the product from seed to store by barcode or RFID tracking tools. Secondly, reasonable possession limits could be established for medical marijuana card holders. Medical marijuana processors should be limited in the amount of product that they can transfer, limited in the circumstances in which they can transfer products, and be required to register as a dispensary to distribute products to card holders. Further, it needs to be made clear how processors receive flowers for processing, as all medical marijuana is the property of the card holder. ODA needs to have the authority to conduct food safety inspection of edible marijuana production. The requirements that commercial kitchens and processors be regulated and the state agency that should regulate them should be clearly stated in the law. I appreciate this committee addressing this issue and thank you for the opportunity to testify today, and I'm happy with my team to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Anybody have questions? Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair Ostroff. Thanks. Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it very much. Part of the balancing act that we're wrestling with has to do with the oils and the amount of marijuana necessary to produce the oils. And I'm sure that's been part of your considerations as well, of basically how to get to the point of making sure there can be a transfer of medicine at a level enough where the oils can be produced that help patients. And do you have any thoughts on that in terms of how to address that particular issue of the high concentration?
Yep. Steve, do you want to answer?
Sure. Chairs Burdick and Leninger, Representative Buckley, I think that is at least about starting to...
I'm sorry. Can you please state your name for the...
Yes, thank you. Steve Wagner, I'm the Center Administrator in the Public Health Division. Thank you. So I think it starts with, as you work through and define both what concentrates and extracts, and we get to those definitions, that's the start of it. But I think that it really is about trying to set some limit in terms of an initial possession. But we've got to have some peace around that. I think there is either through the legislative process or through rules to identify what the individuals are using. you know, how is it that they're holding on to it? We heard I know you heard testimony before from a woman who was got together with her friends and prepared it once a year. I think there are pieces around that that are different than having unlimited amounts that are received from a processor. And so that's kind of some of this place and manner that maybe we can define, that if you're an individual that is creating extract, and I'm sorry, I'm maybe using words that are going to have a different definition depending on how you come with the legislation, but if you're creating a liquid that has THC in it, that there are going to be differences in the amount that you would probably want to allow a patient who is producing that themselves, rather than the amount that they could receive from a processor for whatever purpose.
Okay, thank you. So I have Senator Cruz and then Representative Olson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. Doesn't the health department inspect restaurants?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Okay, which is my confusion, why you still want Department of Ag to do inspections when it's because the difference between the facility is a very minor one, where it falls under Ag and where it falls under the health department.
Thank you, co-chairs Leninger and Burdick. Senator Cruz, when I asked my team the same question, and there are degrees, we regulate restaurants, but commercial kitchens have been of particular concern, particularly in putting together pharmaceutical kind of operations. It's a different scale. We could build the capacity to do that, but it's already situated in the Department of Ag, and we propose this route as faster, and the consolidated expertise is there now. We would have to build it. It's a different level of regulation than a restaurant.
I understand that, I guess, and I understand when you're talking about canneries and things like that is the level that Department of Ag is doing, and I would suggest that institution that is canning corn might be slightly different than an institution that is making brownies. Okay, and you know, I guess my thought, and for you guys to think about it, is we're going into something brand new here, okay?
Yeah.
And we may, because somebody's going to have to ramp up to do it. And I'm thinking with all the other inspections going on in the health department, it might be nice to have it in one shop. So just a thought to think about.
Thank you.
My other question, if I could, Madam Chair, is... You know, nobody's talked about caregivers, which is also an unlimited universe in this, because, I mean, have you guys given any thought to that? Because that's where these co-op thingies are coming from, which is another probably uncontrollable element in the medical marijuana program.
Senator Cruz, co-chairs, I think that's... So it is very unenviable, the task that you have, because I know you're trying very hard to preserve the way in which this works for patients within this context, yet prevent the opportunity to take advantage of a system and divert it into a black or gray market. I think it's also challenging to think about it in the context where it is an individual providing for their grandmother or otherwise. And so I would suggest that the limits may be related to how many individuals you're a caregiver for, because that gets at really the scope of the problem. And so that where tracking is required of the distribution of that, so that if a single caregiver is helping to provide a great quantity of marijuana, then we would have some tracking and transparency on that, whether as opposed to if we're talking about a son that's providing the marijuana to his mother. I really do not want to create an onus on the tracking of that individual amount.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just kind of I'm intrigued with this line of questioning, Steve. So I just kind of want to clarify a little bit more, getting back to the concentrates. So you believe that there should be a limit?
Representative Olson, co-chairs, yes, I think there needs to be a limit in terms of the amount that can be possessed at one time.
Follow-up. Do you have kind of a ballpark where you're thinking? Because right now what we passed a couple years ago in House Bill 3460 set the pace at a pound and a half of concentrate.
Yes, so
not pounds, it's liquids.
But it equates to a pound and a half of liquids. That was asked on the House floor, Senator.
I understand, but it is liquid versus pounds. It's not dry weight. It's ounces.
So, Representative and...
Go ahead.
Representative and members of the committee, co-chairs, yes, so in terms of that quantity of concentrate, I think that there's certainly a distinction between something that is, for example, a beverage that's consumed that is an infused product and something that is, by what our standard definition of a concentrated product is, that is probably not consumed all at one time. So I think there needs to be some limit in terms of how much is available, because that becomes something that is not consumable by that individual in a narrow period of time, but is instead something that could be distributed to others on a black market.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Farioli, and then it looks like Senator Posonski.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. First, Ms. Thaxton, thank you. I'm one of a legion number of Oregonians that are grateful for you taking over the reins at Oregon Health Authority. I'm glad to see you in your official capacity here today. Have you given, Madam Chair, any consideration to an advisory committee for the OHA, similar to what the OLCC has impaneled?
We have not in this context. We certainly could. We have advisory. We have an overall public health advisory committee or board panel currently in existence, and part of our current effort has been to consolidate some of our committees and task forces for effectiveness. But given the subject matter and given the newness of this, we'd be happy to consider that. I think that's an excellent idea.
Madam Chair, if I could just follow, and then I have one more question. Given this issue that we just discussed on the question of supplying the concentrators who have apparently an unlimited demand for feedstock, I think you're going to need the kind of expertise that you can get from folks that are already in that end of the business from Washington, Colorado, and others that are here in Oregon doing that work. And if we don't have that expertise, I think we're just going to be guessing as lay people. So I'd urge you to do that. Madam Chair, the other question is, I have no reason to assume anybody on this panel knows the answer to this question. Since the only marijuana in Oregon that's legal is medically produced, do you have an idea of how big the production for Oregon actually is in pounds, tons, hectares? Do you have any idea of what's being produced out there?
Acreage.
Co-chairs Burdick, Leninger, Senator Farioli, we do not.
Okay. Madam Chair, the size of the bread box, I've heard numbers that are astounding. And I'm not going to repeat them because they're that astounding. But I think it would be good for us to try to get somebody, Oregon State University or somebody, Department of Ag, somebody, to give us an idea of what the current level of production is in the state of Oregon. I think it will be a shockingly large number. Thank you, Madam Chair.
That's a good point. Senator Posonski.
Yeah, thank you. Ms. Saxon, my understanding is there already is an advisory committee that is part of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that as being already in existence.
Co-chairs Leninger and Burdick, Senator Posonski, there is a scientific advisory committee currently, and there is a medical marijuana advisory committee, but they are crafted under the existing framework, and the scientific advisory committee actually met today And continues to meet. I had understood Senator Farioli's focus to be slightly different, but we do have those two covered. The existing committee, I don't know, Priscilla, if we know that other committee, whether it is fully populated at this point.
The scientific advisory?
The other committee he's referring to.
It is.
Okay.
And Steve could speak to that because they're very active.
I guess what I want to make certain is when you're reading Measure 91, multiple times it says that the OMP or the OMMA is not to be impacted by the passage of 91. So we already have in place an advisory committee that's part of that program. And I'm hoping that the agency is not looking at, let's say, doing away with it instead of using them as their expertise and moving forward with whatever modifications we might make with the current OMMP.
As co-chairs Leninger and Burdick, Senator Przanski, I would suggest, as part of our current look at agency practices and committees, that, and given the changes brought forth by Senate Bill 844, my recommendation to this committee would be that we look at the membership of that committee and ensure that we have sufficient expertise. We are doing that with all of our advisory committees right now, including, as part of that effort, looking at scope of work and timeliness of what they're focused on. There's been about a two-year gap in addressing all the committees that advise the Oregon Health Authority, and we have made a decision which is in motion to update, review, and refocus mission where necessary. So I concur with you, but I would still want to reserve the right to incorporate this committee, like our other committees, in that review, which has not been taken on for several years.
Okay. If I can follow up.
Yes.
I guess what I would just say regarding that advisory committee, my understanding is it's extremely active. It's not been one that's been dormant for 2 years. I think in all reality that they have been, and they have been wanting to continue their participation. So I'm glad that you're willing to look at that, and hopefully we're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater in this situation. If I could follow up with Steve. With Representative Olson asked you about quantities for concentrates. I heard an answer, and I guess I just need some clarification. If you have someone that's actually doing outdoor growing and they're converting that usable marijuana into extracts or concentrates, they would have a vast amount that would be transformed, and if that was something they're planning on using during a duration of a year or some longer period than just a month, do you think that it would be appropriate for them to have that larger quantity so they could actually do their self-medicating, or are you considering that they need to be able to or be required to go to a dispensary on a regular basis to purchase and to access that medicine?
Senator Przanski, co-chairs, members of the committee. So as I understood your question, it had to do with whether someone that's growing and then processes it themselves should be allowed to have a relatively unlimited quantity. And yes, I think there's an issue in terms of scale. So if we're talking about a grower and as I understand the question, it would be about an individual who's doing that grow, six plants, they're harvesting that, they're creating a concentrate or extract. I think that that's not the scope of the issue that we're most concerned about. It is instead an entire grow site with whatever up to the number of plants that we're talking about, that becomes processed concentrate or whatever, that we need to make sure that we understand the limits there, or in fact if there's no limit on possession for an individual, could all of that processed concentrate go to one individual? And that's what I'm kind of concerned about, that patient could then be the source of the diversion because they can receive an unlimited amount of concentrate.
Yes, please, Representative Buckley, and then Senator Beyer, do you have a question?
I'm trying to follow the thinking on it. Since the patient can grow for themselves, and a grower can grow the same number of plants for the patient, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out what the difference is if I grow the plants for myself and I do my concentrate, or if Co-Chair Langer grows the plants for me, the same number of plants, and gives me the marijuana to do the concentrate. I'm not sure what the issue is on that. If Co-Chair Langer gives me the plants from three other patients, I could see where the concern would be, because all of a sudden I would have way more than I could have if I grow for myself. So I'm trying to figure out exactly where the concern is lying.
Representative Buckley, co-chairs, that's your example of them providing all of the concentrate that is produced from the plants of other patients as well is exactly what I'm concerned about. So it is not the providing the material from the plants that I was asking for the grower to grow. Mm-hmm. It is providing all of the marijuana material that might be from multiple patients for which that grow site is growing. I would understand that that it would be permitted under at least the way it's structured now.
Thank you, ma'am. Because that's not my understanding. My understanding is that the patient would still own the amount of marijuana that was grown for that patient, but would have no ability to access the other marijuana from another patient. So that's something that I think would have to be clarified. At least that's my understanding is that a patient could, and there is a gap in the program. I'm going to choose. I don't want to choose my Republican friends because they get a little uncomfortable.
No, go ahead. No, feel free.
But if Representative Helm was a fellow patient, because patients can give each other marijuana, Chair Leninger apparently could give Representative Helm his marijuana, give me the marijuana that's grown for me, and Representative Helm could give me more marijuana. And that is how the system is right now. But as I understand it, unless Representative Helm told Chair Leninger, go ahead and give Buckley all my marijuana, she could not do that under the law as it exists and as we're contemplating. Just want to clarify that. And I do appreciate your generosity, Representative Helm.
I have a question, actually. And thank you for being here, and thank you for being here early in your tenure, and you've walked into a very full docket. And Ms. Lewis, too, my recollection is that you're somewhat new, but I know that you're tremendously capable and effective from other work that we've had a chance to do together in the past. So it's all on you, Steve. No, I'm kidding. But what I was going to ask, actually, recognizing that we're all in this together trying to create a workable system that's safe for patients and safe for the community and good for small and large businesses, too. Mr. Burns had been a very high-capacity staff person working on marijuana programs for OHA, and then he transitioned away from OHA. I'm wondering if you can help describe what the staffing is currently for marijuana programs at OHA, and if you envision making adjustments, because this is a significant, you know, sector.
Chairs and members of the committee. So currently, right now, the program is somewhat separate. So right now, you have what's the CARD program, the registry program for patients, growers, caregivers, and that is a little south of 30 staff. Most of that's about processing the document, all the processing of the documentation that comes in, a little bit of the maintenance of the database. As well, then, we have the dispensary program, which is out there, so doing the license and inspection, any necessary enforcement actions that occur. That is, I should be able to do this with a number, but I can count the people just by looking at them. It's not very big. So we have four staff right now that are actually the investigators, a clerk that's doing the administrative process, and someone who's really working that GIS aspect of making sure that we've got the 1,000-foot set-asides and others. So it's a super small program right now. Given that really there are few expansions that really are happening concurrent, not just with potentially this increased regulatory authority. But with the lifting of the moratoriums, we have a number of dispensaries that will now be looking to operate that previously could not. So that inspection workload will increase. We're at our almost our one-year anniversary, so we're about to see the reinspection of facilities as well. And then certainly we would have the workload about regarding the licensing of processors, why we talk about it as a card for growers, we would still have that regulatory inspection kind of activity that would need to occur. So there, that is a significant growth in terms of the responsibilities.
And who's the director of that set of programs? Is that your, are you the lucky person to be in charge of that? Or
co-chair, yes, I am.
You are. Okay, great. Thank you. Any that Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We really haven't gotten into the issue of these clinics that issue medical marijuana cards, and I understand there are a high percentage of cards that are issued by a small percentage of clinics for a variety of reasons. And so I'm kind of intrigued by your chart here, which makes some reference to 450 patients. I guess I'd like to find out more about how you treat the clinic, how you regulate the clinics now, and what you see happening in the future. We haven't dealt with it in this legislation, but it's entirely possible that it does have a legislative, it will have legislative needs in the future, and I'd like to get an early sense of what you see from the clinic perspective.
So, co-chair and members of the committee, so let me kind of talk about the framework and how that kind of came to pass, as I understand it. And I will tell you that I'm 6 months to Oregon, so I don't have a heck of a lot of history about how all this came, other than understanding from many of the program staff that have been there quite a long time. So as there was some concern with regard to some of the physicians that have quite a number of patients, my understanding is they believe that within the context of rule that they could at least do some confirmation that those physicians really were the attending physician for the condition under which the recommendation was being provided. So we were trying to, without going to the depth of understanding whether or not they were completely how they were practicing medicine, we were at least trying to affirm within the scope that we had that they needed to be that primary attending physician. And so the way in which that 450 number came about is that there was a look to say, well, how many patients are there? What's the percentage of what that would look like in reference to the Oregon population, and how many patients could a physician reasonably see in a period of time? And that's where kind of the 450 came out, is if you were a super high producing physician and you were your percentage of the medical marijuana card patients was uniform across, 450 was about where we came up.
Madam Chair, if I could interrupt, 450,
sure.
Over what period of time?
A year.
450 a year. Patients a
yeah.
year.
And yes, ma'am. So the idea is that because they do need to be seen annually by that physician, so this is an annual card, that was kind of that expression, that if you were seeing more than 450 patients annually, we wanted a little bit more additional documentation to show that you truly were seeing each of these patients as the primary attending physician for that condition.
And Madam Chair, if I can just follow up, what is the, so 450 is the low, and what is the high end for some of these physicians? What's the most patients a single physician can see?
Wow, this is the moment where I wish I had cheaters. one second, I think I have it sitting right here. So this was as of January 2015, and the most was 7,573 patients.
One physician?
For one physician.
7,000?
That's a big patient.
Yes.
OK. Okay.
No problem there.
When you come across a physician with 7,000 patients, what do you do about that?
So for 450 patients, so they're all each, whether it's that physician or anyone who, and let's see, do I have the stats on, I could shuffle through the papers, and I'm sure I have the stats of how many physicians are over that 450 limit, but for every one of them that are over that 450 limit, with that we need, with that application from that patient, the additional documentation that shows that that physician really is seeing them for the primary condition that they're getting the recommendation for. And I can provide that form that shows what we're asking. It's a way of getting some level of assurance that they really are, you know, going through getting a history and physical and seeing that patient.
Madam Chair,
please, and then Senator Byer.
If you find out that they are not doing that service, what are your options in terms of that physician? For example, if you find out that they're really not a primary caregiver, they are just issuing cards, then what options, and has that happened?
Co-chair, I would have to go back and be sure. I wouldn't want to tell you I wouldn't want to tell you that we actually have seen that, although, so I'm not going to say any more about that. But yes, our authority would extend only to denying the card to that patient. It would have nothing to do with regard to the physician. I will tell you that the names of these physicians have actually been made public a number of times in news media. It has been asked for, and as well as the report that we have on all of the physicians that are over 450 has been communicated with the licensing board as well.
Senator Byer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the 455, is that just new prescription, or does that include annual renewals?
Senator Byer, members of the committee co-chairs, so that is everyone's required to annually renew, and so it is each time that they do that, then they are required to.
So that 455 could include renewals then?
Yes, sir. It's a rolling number.
Yep. So it's a rolling number. It's, mm-hmm. It's not an additive number.
Nope.
Okay.
Has anyone got any additional questions for the panel at this time?
Pretty big caseload.
Senator Fraley.
Just a question. It's sort of the moratorium that was in place for dispensaries expired. I think it was the first. Have you seen a flood of new applications for dispensaries, medical dispensaries? I think 140 cities took advantage of the moratorium.
Senator Ferraioli, chairs and members of the committee, we've actually have not seen a flood as much as a continuing increase over this year period. And so let me also provide one other thing. So we took license applications, whether there was a moratorium or not, and we processed those. It was so we move through those because it's still up to whether they can operate or not. They can have a license from us. They may not be able to operate because of the moratorium. So when that moratorium lifted, their licenses could become valid. So maybe that's part of the reason we did not necessarily see a flood of applications. May is still young, so I don't know what will happen, but we have seen a general rise, and I could get you the statistics on
please.
That.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Madam Chair, yes. For someone who is applying for one of these licenses, how much cost is there to the applicant in this process? So they apply for the license, and you go through the whole licensing process, and I presume you give them the license contingent on the moratorium being lifted. How does that work?
Yes, Senator Burdick, co-chairs and members of the committee. So the license... I think strictly speaking, we talk about it. $500 is the application fee and $3,500 for the license fee. The distinction's important because if we find out, for example, that they are within 1,000 feet of a school or a facility, then we refund $3,500 of it and keep the $500 as part of that application fee because we've done a lot of processing to get there. But it's so to directly answer your question, $4,000. So they will move through that process, and unfortunately, most of the reason anybody usually doesn't get a license is they weren't complete, and we work through with them to try and get their application complete. But there are also, as you know, background check requirements, and there are sometimes instances in which they simply cannot be licensed because they can't meet the criteria. But certainly the most prominent one is they're within 1,000 feet of a school or within 1,000 feet of an existing already licensed dispensary.
Okay. So looks like we have exhausted our questions for the moment, but you've provided us with a lot of food for thought, and we will in a range of scenarios surely be talking more. So thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
So at this stage in the conversation, we have several amendments that have been posted on OLIS that people have filed since our last meeting. This is an opportunity to have Adam describe them, and if the individual who sought the amendment would like to, I'm sorry, to have Mr. Mayor describe them perhaps, and the individual who sought the amendment is welcome to, you know, put forth the reasoning for why they think that would be a helpful addition. So now we have Mr. Mark Mayer, our dauntless drafter of a ton of legislation. Thank you, sir, for being here. You could introduce yourself for the record. We'll look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Chairs Burdick, Leininger, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I was specifically asked by the committee administrator to come in and talk about the dash 16s, 13s, and 17s. I could also talk briefly about the 14s and the 15s if you would like me to do that as well.
I think that would be fine. Thank you.
Okay. I'll start with the 13s and the 17s. They're the more complicated. And the important thing to remember about the 17s is they have all the components of the dash 13 amendments, plus they have possession limits for usable marijuana, as well as some clarification language around information that's going to be given to cities and counties. Both amendments contain clarification language around medical cannabinoid products, and that clarification language basically states that these products, including a product intended to be applied to a person's skin or hair, it's intended to get at the topicals. Both amendments memorialize the rule for $20 of issuance or renewal of a registry identification card to a person having served in the armed forces who's been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. Both amendments take all the residency requirements from 4 years for the licensed producers, processors, and dispensaries and move that cap down to 2. Both amendments close up the issue with the update that we discussed the last time I testified before the committee, where before we were trying to create the grandfather limit on a specific date, and with some good feedback from DOJ, instead of making it hinge on the operative date, we were able to make it hinge on the plant count on the date that the grandfather is supposed to take effect, which will be December 31st, 2014, and that's for both the urban residential and the non-urban residential grows, so for both the 24 and 96 plant caps. The first difference is Excuse me. The first difference is that we now have limits for usable marijuana in the dash 17s. Those are on page 2 of that amendment. For patients and caregivers, we created the same cap that is in current law, 24 ounces of usable marijuana. For persons who are designated by a registry identification card holder, meaning not home grows where persons are growing for themselves, but for people who are designated by multiple patients to grow for them, we have created a higher plant cap. It is the amount of usable, they may keep all usable marijuana that they harvest so long as it is the same amount that they report to the Oregon Health Authority underneath the tracking light system, except that it cannot be in excess of, for an outdoor grow site, 9 pounds per plant. For an indoor grow site, 3 pounds per plant. That's the first difference between the two amendments. Section 15 of both amendments, one begins at the top of page 2, one at the bottom of page 2, then the dash 17s. It is largely the same language, except we have included wherever law enforcement can receive information. We've included also a reference to counties and cities so they too can receive information from OHA underneath the same circumstances in the dash 17s. That is not in the dash 13s. And then I think that the final difference between the two and the last thing I would like to point out on page 4 of the dash 17s, if disciplinary action is taken against one of the licensed producers, processors, or dispensaries, then OHA is, it's mandatory that OHA reports that to law enforcement. Those are the dash 13s and 17s. Any questions?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Any questions on these?
Guys.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. Just a comment on the, I had asked to be included on the, proof of having served in the armed forces of the United States and having diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. This had come up earlier from a veteran who told me that he was very grateful that the PTSD was added to the list of ailments that could be treated by medical marijuana. But when he went to apply, the type of paperwork that he had he got kind of snaggled in bureaucratic. So I'm just trying with this amendment to say, if there's documentation from the military of any kind, doesn't have to be a specific form, then that veteran qualifies under this provision.
That's right. I would also add that the decision to go from 4 years to 2 years for the residency requirement would bring the proposed residency requirement into alignment with the way it works in Colorado, and make it clear that the residency requirement is intended to fit with our obligations under the Cole memo, namely that folks who are engaged in the industry here be intending to engage here and not potentially redirecting product to other markets in other states. Yes, sir.
One other question. I'm not sure whose amendment this is, but on page 2, the lines 18 through 21, the limits on the possession after a harvest, the question that comes to my mind is, if the harvest comes in and the patient is given their share of the marijuana, then that this would mean that the grower is automatically breaking the law if they had a harvest larger than resulting 9 pounds for mature marijuana plant outdoors or 3 pounds. I'm not sure what they're supposed to do with that excess marijuana. Are they supposed to, I'm just not quite sure what they're supposed to do with it, because they will be breaking the law as soon as they harvest, as I understand this.
Yeah, Madam Chair, maybe I could address that. This came out of a concern from the Department of Justice about compliance with the Cole Memorandum, mm-hmm. that if you didn't have some kind of sideboards around the possession, our intention was to match the possession with the capability of the plants, okay, so that you don't have people automatically out of compliance the minute they harvest their plants.
Right.
So that is the fundamental part of this provision. They have to match. Your tracking has to match what you actually have there, for plant-wise. They wanted an upper limit, so we just kind of arbitrarily, based on testimony we've received in this committee, picked 9 pounds for outdoor plants and 3 pounds for indoor plants, thinking that that was a pretty generous allocation per plant. So that is how we set the ceiling, that people would not go, would be very, very unlikely to go above the ceiling, but they're obligated to go below the ceiling if the plant product doesn't justify the possession.
Great. I look forward to hearing the folks who do this for a business and getting a reaction on that.
Yeah, and again, that it was arbitrary based on what I've heard in this committee, and it may not be quite right. We intended to be on the high end.
Gotcha.
For the overall cap.
Thanks, Senator.
Okay, so that is a description of the dash 13s and dash 17s. Does anyone have additional thoughts, questions for Mr. Mayor on those before he moves forward to the next ones? All right, then. Let's proceed, please.
The remaining three Chair Zeininger, Chair Burdick, the remaining three amendments are fairly simple. The dash 16s basically allow the governing body of a city or county to adopt ordinances that prohibit the establishment of one of the dispensaries or processing sites, not grow sites, in the area subject to the jurisdiction of the city or county. They also grandfather in registered dispensaries that are registered with OHA on or before May 1st, 2015. And then the final two amendments, the dash 14s and the dash 15s, both take the current operative date, which is March 1st, 2016 of next year, and they move it back. The dash 14s move it back to December 31st, 2016, and the dash 15s move it back to July 1st, 2017, which would fall one day out of the upcoming fiscal biennium.
Yes, did the Senator Ferriero, Senator, yeah.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mark. The question that occurs to me is, we heard the previous panel discuss their ongoing effort to process dispensary applications. For the purpose of the dash 16s, would that mean all of those applications that were processed but have not operated, would they fit into the grandfather clause? Or would those only be the dispensaries that were not only licensed, but by the local jurisdiction permitted?
Co-Vice Chair Ferrioli, the way that I read that would be, since if they are registered, then they would be grandfathered in from the ordinance.
So, Madam Chair, that so any one of those applications that was received for siting in a city that had the moratorium on would be grandfathered in?
Correct.
Wait a second. Maybe, Madam Chair, maybe I'm not understanding
right.
The process. But if a dispensary has been, they've gone through the process and OHA has given them the go-ahead, but they have not yet received a permit from the city because they're under a moratorium. Does the city give a permit and just say you can't have this till the moratorium's gone? How does that work?
Chair Burdick, the language in the amendments says is registered with the Oregon Health Authority. So if they've gone through that registration process and they're holding on to the registration even though they're not allowed to open, then the language that is in the dash 16s would grandfather them in. We could change the language ever so slightly to something along the lines of is registered and making transfers as described in ORS 475.314, and then you would have to have an operational facility in order to be grandfathered in.
But Madam Chairman, to follow up, don't they have to also have a city permit to to operate? I mean, it's you could be approved by the OHA, but don't you also have to have a city permit?
Correct. My understanding of the testimony that I heard from Mr. Wagner, and he might be able to come up and give his own take on this amendment, but my understanding was is that there are people who are currently licensed or registered but not operational, which I was unaware of when we actually drafted the amendment.
So was I. I had this amendment drafted as a discussion piece, but the intent was clearly people who had made an investment were cited and cited or had been permitted by the city. In other words, the city had said, we don't want the moratorium, you're permitted, so that they wouldn't basically engage in a takings if the county decided, or it's the county or city decided to take away the authority, that they would not get into the position of doing a taking.
Chair Burdick, I think with some minor tweaking of the language, we can get to that intent quite easily.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you. I just want to, on the 14th and the 15th, I think there are the, with in terms of the date, and I know this is an issue we have to wrestle with. What was driving me a little crazy driving home last week and then driving back this morning is trying to figure out how the 91 system is going to go into operation. If the if the operative date for the plant limits is a certain date, and we're expecting that if we are expecting the medical marijuana growers to help grow for the recreational side, I'm concerned about how dropping plant limits while asking producers to produce more for the recreational side is going to match out. I'm not quite sure how that balance is enacted, which is why I think the dates are important for us to try to figure out to get it right. We might not be able to make this decision until we make the decision on, are we going to have the medical marijuana growers grow for the first year of the Measure 91 shops? If we are, then I think we have to be very careful about what we do with adjusting the size of the grows. We just have to do it in a thoughtful manner. So these are not my amendments, but I support having these amendments for discussion because I want to make sure we don't inadvertently shut off the supply of the marijuana that we're expecting to fund to actually serve the first year of the recreational market, if that's the decision we decide to make as a committee.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Senator Pozanski.
Yeah, thank you. The dash 14s and 15s were ones I requested to be drafted. This came from more discussions after we had the dash 6s in place with the March 1, 2016 date. It came pretty apparent to me that there are a number of patients who are very concerned right now as to how the transition is going to go forward, as to whether or not their grower, if they have someone growing for them, is going to continue in the medical program. And I think all of us in the dais have said that we want to ensure that medical patients are not adversely affected. So these two dates actually represent times further in the process of when we expect or anticipate the recreational side to be up and running and the retail actually operating. Based on what OLCC's told us, they expect it to be sometime in the fall of 2016 to be operative with retail sales for rec. So by having either the dash 14s, which would be the end of that same year, we would kind of see where and how the growers are going to, let's say, potentially separate from the medical program and go into a full license program for recreational. And the July 1st of 2017 gives a little bit more flexibility to allow for that to shake out, and we wanted to do that and as an alternative to allow for that market to settle. And then this will give patients, the key here is for the patients to be able to realign with a different grower if their grower leaves the medical program to go into the retail. And that will give them the opportunity to, it's not as easy as just going into the yellow pages and finding somebody. There are some associations that help get patients aligned with growers that do certain type of varieties that are dealing with different type of ailments. The question is what's going to be enough time to allow those patients to be able to be reconnected with a grower who's staying in the medical program or goes into the medical program as compared to being kind of out on a limb without having, as Representative Buckley said, access to that medicine that they had had previously.
And Madam Chair, on that point, I think that's been a difficult issue for some people, and I think one of the things that might be considered is requiring growers that intend to switch to the medical market or to the recreational market to inform their patients on a timely basis so that they will have a time to make the adjustments. And that's something I haven't had an amendment drafted, but I'm considering doing that
Following up with that, the other part of this is with us putting down the number of patients that a person can have and having the grandfather, one of the issues is you could have someone that's grandfathered in for a larger set of patients and they choose to go recreational. Now you're putting a squeeze on those individuals who are with this grower who has been doing a larger grow, and how do you align them into somebody who is within a smaller number of based on what we've put there. That's the parts, the hydraulics that we need to, you know, keep in mind if we really don't want to have an adverse impact on the patient.
Any additional thoughts on this? So, Mr. Mayor, are there any additional thoughts that you'd like to offer on this? So where we are is that we've heard from the director of the Oregon Health Authority. We have heard brief descriptions of amendments that have been proposed to date, and we are hoping to have a bill quite soon that incorporates the greatest hits, the best thinking of this group in a way that enables the maximum number of members of the group to be supportive. So. You know, there's a lot of thinking and work to be done, but hopefully we'll get it done in the very near term. And with that, Madam Co-Chair, would you like to make any announcements about our next meeting?
I think you've covered it all. We have a work session scheduled for Wednesday. Stay tuned. The meeting will or will not take place.
Right then. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks.
That pretty much
adjourned. Thanks.
That pretty much
meeting is